It is a Saturday morning when we have a bit of a wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Jack Farrell. Jack, good morning.
Hi there, Denny. How are you this morning?
I am doing quite well. Thank you for asking. I hope you are, too. I think it's going to be a beautiful weekend.
A beautiful weekend. You know, and I thought I'd talk about it. I had a glass of Chianti last night, and it just hit me the right way. It was absolutely delicious, and I thought we haven't discussed Chianti in a long, long time on this Saturday chat, and I thought today would be a good day to do just that. There's probably no wine in the world that has a more noble history than Chianti does, and it certainly had its ups and downs. You know, for years it was regarded as cheap plonk. As a matter of fact, Gallo, one of their biggest sellers, was a big 3-gallon jug of something called Chianti that they made in their laboratories out in California. Because, you know, the interesting thing about Gallo's, in fact, until about, oh, maybe it was the mid to late 90s, the Gallo's never owned any real estate. They bought grapes by contract, and however, everything else they made, including their own bottles, if you go to Gallo in Modesto and you tour their plants there, they have glass-blowing machines where they make their own bottles. It's just an incredible operation. And today, they are amongst the finest names in the wine world are associated with the Gallo family. But at one time, Gallo sued the Chianti people for using the black rooster on the neck of the consortium. That was the symbol of the consortium, was a black rooster called Gallo Nero. Black rooster on the neck of the consortium, that was the symbol of the consortium, was a black rooster called Gallo Nero. And Gallo sued them for using their name. However, Gallo lost that suit. Gallo is pretty much a very common Italian word for rooster or cock. And Nero was black, so Gallo Nero. And they lost, and thank heavens they did. But as I said, it has a noble, noble background. There's no wine in the entire world that has the history that Chianti does. Going back to the Etruscan time, they were major producers of wine there, and that's a couple thousand years B.C. before the Christian era. It was just incredible. And as far as referring to wines early on, it goes back to the 13th century when they talk about the mountains of Chianti around Florence producing such fine wines. And then in about 1700, Cosimo de' Medici put out an actual delimitation of where Chianti could come from, etc. And then Baron Ricasoli in the 1840s, while we were having civil war here, he was declaring what the composition and the regulations regarding Chianti should be. And then from World War II on, it's changed a lot. Of course, soldiers came home and wanted that light red wine they liked so well in the Tuscan countryside, which was called Chianti. And the USA was glutted with very cheap plonk Chianti. Its most charming attraction was the bottle. It came in these Fraschetti-wrapped bottles, wicker-wrapped bottles, and there wasn't a respectable Italian restaurant in the United States from after World War II until the late 70s, early 80s. If you were an Italian restaurant, you had to have one of those Frascati bottles with a candle in it on your tables. It was almost a must requirement. And it's interesting, when we talk about those wicker labels, everyone just thought that was a marketing gimmick and very clever. Originally, its source was extremely interesting, that those carafes are wrapped in wicker or raffia, and then they would be lowered into the well at night with the wine in them. And then the next day pulled out of the well, and that wet raffia, as it dried, would keep the wine cool for lunch. So when the workers in the field had their lunch, they had their wine with it, too, at a halfway decent temperature, because as that water evaporated off of the raffia or the wicker bottle wrapping, it tended to refrigerate or chill down the wine, which is rather brilliant. Today you get them, but a lot of times they're made with synthetic, and they really don't do that anymore because the Chianti has taken its place beside all the great wines of the world and comes in the normal kind of shaped bottles. And as a matter of fact, the Chianti region is enormous. It goes almost clear across Italy, composed of the big towns of Pisa, Florence, Siena, etc. And this huge swath of land, you can produce Chianti. And as the rules and regulations have let up, the most important thing is Chianti must be at least 70% Sangiovese. And Sangiovese is a wonderful grape. But that area produces such remarkable wines, as was noted by Cosimo de' Medici in 1700, that they wanted to improve that. In about 1980, the people in Tuscany invented what they called Super Tuscans. These were wines that were made out of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Syrah, other grape types other than Sangiovese, because Sangiovese, according to Italian law, if Chianti is to be labeled Chianti, it must be at least 70% Sangiovese. And so when you buy these Super Tuscans, which are some of the most expensive wines produced in all of Italy, it's just very interesting. Ornellaia, Sassicaia are a couple of the Super Tuscan wines. They're sometimes the most expensive wines that come out of the country of Italy, and they are labeled just vin de table, or vino di tavola, wine of the table, because they have forsaken their any other namesake according to the laws of production of Chianti and of Tuscany, so that thus they're called Super Tuscans, and what you're drinking is just considered ordinary table wine, except it just shows the enormous quality of that soil and the ability to produce great wines in this huge area of Tuscany, which Chianti comprises most of. And the Chiantis of the world are really interesting. I, at one time, had a vineyard in Chianti called Villa Cafaggio. I wish I never sold it, but I did a long time ago. And it was great fun to go there twice a year and get involved in the harvest and get involved in planting and all the wonderful parts of owning a vineyard and none of the day-to-day responsibilities, because, believe me, owning a vineyard is darn hard work. And those people, those vineyards have my utmost respect, because unlike farmers, where you have the winter off, or a lot of it off anyway, when you're a winemaker, you're working all winter in the cellar. So it's really a time-consuming job and a wonderful, dedicated job. And we had a wonderful winemaker, Stefano, at Villa Cafaggio. It's just terrific. But what brought me to even talking about Villa Cafaggio is there's a town that Villa Cafaggio is very close to called Greve in Chianti. Greve in Chianti is a wonderful, picturesque town with a beautiful little church in it, and a unique plaza, etc. And they had the first of what I would call automatic dispensary for a wine tasting. Actually, it's an Italian invention. The Germans take credit for it. But you'd buy a card for 10 euros or 20 euros or whatever, and then you would get a glass and you'd put your card in the dispenser where the wine was, and then you would get an ounce or two of that particular wine. And it was totally dedicated to Chianti wines in this Greve in Chianti wine tasting operation, which was all automated. And of course, at the time, this was in the mid to early 80s, it was considered just so fantastic. Now you see those dispensaries all over the world, and they're not so unique. But at the time when I first saw that in Greve, I had never seen one before, and there weren't very many. I think it was the third one ever made. But anyhow, it was just terrific. And talking about just terrific, Tuscany is just terrific. If you want a place to go and visit, I'm telling you, whether you like Chianti or you don't like Chianti, Tuscany is just hill towns at its best, is what I would call it. As you drive through the Tuscan countryside, you see all these fortified towns up in the hills, and they have their churches and forts, etc. I won't say it's impossible, but it's very, very hard in Tuscany to get a bad meal. They're really terrific cooks, and when you're sopping up that beautiful countryside and the great food, and plus the culture in those places, you know, Siena and Florence are virtually unbelievable for the amount of art, etc., that's reposing in those towns. And even some of the small towns around there have art that it just takes your breath away. And while you're in that Chianti region, you not only can satisfy your artistic desires, you can satisfy your appetite because the food is absolutely terrific. And then the scenery is, as I said, almost breathtaking. When you sit in some of these plazas and have an aperitif and overlook that gorgeous countryside, you just know God is in heaven and all is right with the world. It's just a beautiful, wonderful place. And, of course, the Chianti runs the gamut. I mean, there are Chiantis for almost every taste. And it's a wonderful expression of that terroir, the soil of that whole Tuscan region, that they can produce such variety as they do. A couple of the better known wines that aren't called Chianti, but really well known and much very highly regarded, is Brunello di Montalcino and Montalcino, and Nobili di Montalcino are just marvelous, and they're, again, almost 100% Sangiovese and wonderful wines to try. But today we're talking about Chianti and not their more expensive neighbors. But a good Chianti, you know, it's a little like the Rhone Valley. It's so big. There's over 10 million cases of Chianti are produced in that area. And so some of it isn't very good, thin and watery. Others are just terrific, and some of it is light and fun. And when you can find a light and fun Chianti, if it's got a good mother and father, in other words, it's been tended to by a good vineyard owner and he's bought it from some good co-ops or whatever, those wines can be an unbelievable bargain and get them for $10, $12 a bottle. Our own is Villa Casa Ferrelli, which is a combination of Farrell and Giorelli, our winemaker. That's Stefano, who I mentioned earlier was with Cafaggio, has come up with this Villa Ferrelli, Casa Ferrelli, Chianti, which is wonderful for everyday drinking wine and just super for stuff on the barbecue. And that's another thing about Chianti's that's really great, is they go so well with so many different dishes. I mean, you can have them, as I said, one of the great dishes of the world is Tuscan beefsteak, where they take a big, huge steak and sear it very quickly on either side. Then they throw in garlic and rosemary and olive oil in a pan, get that kind of slice up that steak that's just been seared, so it's almost what the French would call blue. It's so rare. And you throw it in that garlic and rosemary and olive oil, and I'm telling you, that is some way to have a steak. It is absolutely delicious. And it's big and powerful, yet the Chianti goes well with that. And it'll also go well with a very delicate ravioli or a very hearty lasagna. But Chianti has all of those attributes. And the nice thing about it is, much like they learned, those peasants learned a long time ago, Chianti takes the chill kind of nicely. Particularly if you aren't buying a real expensive Chianti, one that's $50 or $60 a bottle, and you're buying just a $12, $15 bottle of wine or under, put a little chill on it. You won't be disappointed, and the chill doesn't take anything away from the wine. There's no deleterious effects whatsoever, but it is a delicious wine. So there we have a story, if you will, about Chianti. It's been satisfying people now for over 4,000 years, a wine from that region for 4,000 years. Wasn't always called Chianti, and probably didn't even look the same. But the fact of the matter is, you can't deny history, and that has a very noble history. And they're much like the Bordelais in the world. They blend wines. You know, the principal grape type is, as I said, Sangiovese, but they blend in Cabernet, Merlot, Syrah are a few of better-known wines that are blended. They also used to put in white grapes, two different types in Chianti that they don't do anymore. But anyhow, Chianti is a wonderful, wonderful red wine. It's a wonderful part of the world, and I encourage you, if you ever get the opportunity, go and visit Tuscany. I guarantee you will not be disappointed.
Oh, one of my favorites. And let's talk about Haskell's a little bit before we break.
Jack. Indeed, the folks at Haskell's love to talk about wine and love to help you pair wine with your meals, whether you're going to have something very fancy or something very plain. While they can't do the cooking, they can make sure that the meal is memorable. There's a Haskell's near you where you can save big dollars on wine. We have a Haskell's in Bloomington. There's one in Excelsior, Faribault, right off of 35. Our Maple Grove Super Cellar is just not to be believed. 22,000 square feet of wines from around the world, lots of Chianti, too, I might add. In downtown Minneapolis, we have free parking on Saturday and Sunday. There's a Haskell's at Ridgedale, Plymouth, St. Paul's Island Village, Stillwater, White Bear Lake, and Woodbury, too. And if you can't come in, go to Haskell's.com. And don't forget, Haskell's does deliver. And while I'm talking about it, don't miss the first cruise on the beautiful St. Croix next week. And what about, don't miss the first cruise on the beautiful St. Croix next week. And what a cruise it is. There's a wonderful lunch, all sorts of wine and beer and spirits. 3 hours of pure heaven on the Haskell's boat tour.
That sounds wonderful. Jack, let's talk again next week.
You know, Denny, I'm going to look forward to that.
That's Jack Farrell from Haskell's. It is a Saturday morning when we have a bit of a wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Jack Farrell. Jack, good morning.
Hi there, Denny. How are you this morning?
I am doing quite well. Thank you for asking. I hope you are, too. I think it's going to be a beautiful weekend.
A beautiful weekend. You know, and I thought I'd talk about it. I had a glass of Chianti last night, and it just hit me the right way. It was absolutely delicious, and I thought, we haven't discussed Chianti in a long, long time on this Saturday chat, and I thought today would be a good day to do just that. There's probably no wine in the world that has a more noble history than Chianti does, and it certainly had its ups and downs. You know, for years it was regarded as cheap plonk. As a matter of fact, Gallo, one of their biggest sellers, was a big 3-gallon jug of something called Chianti that they made in their laboratories out in California. Because, you know, the interesting thing about Gallo's, in fact, until about, oh, maybe it was the mid to late 90s, the Gallo's never owned any real estate. They bought grapes by contract, and however, everything else they made, including their own bottles, if you go to Gallo in Modesto and you tour their plants there, they have glass-blowing machines where they make their own bottles. It's just an incredible operation. And today, they are amongst the finest names in the wine world, are associated with the Gallo family. But at one time, Gallo sued the Chianti people for using the black rooster on the neck of the consortium. That was the symbol of the consortium, was a black rooster called Gallo Nero. Black rooster on the neck of the consortium. That was the symbol of the consortium, was a black rooster called Gallo Nero. And Gallo sued them for using their name. However, Gallo lost that suit. Gallo is pretty much a very common Italian word for rooster or cock. And it was Nero was black, so Gallo Nero, And they lost, and thank heavens they did. But as I said, it has a noble, noble background. There's no wine in the entire world that has the history that Chianti does. Going back to the Etruscan time, they were major producers of wine there, and that's a couple thousand years B.C. before the Christian era. It was just incredible. And as far as referring to wines early on, it goes back to the 13th century when they talk about the mountains of Chianti around Florence producing such fine wines. And then in about 1700, Cosimo de' Medici put out an actual delimitation of where Chianti could come from, etc. And then Baron Ricasoli in the 1840s, while we were having civil war here, he was declaring what the composition and the regulations regarding Chianti should be. And then from World War II on, it's changed a lot. Of course, soldiers came home and wanted that light red wine they liked so well in the Tuscan countryside, which was called Chianti. And the USA was glutted with very cheap Blanc Chianti. Its most charming attraction was the bottle. It came in these Fraschetti-wrapped bottles, wicker-wrapped bottles, and there wasn't a respectable Italian restaurant in the United States from maybe from after World War II until this maybe the late 70s, early 80s. If you were in an Italian restaurant, you had to have one of those Frascati bottles with a candle in it on your tables. It was almost a must requirement. And it's interesting, when we talk about those wicker labels, everyone just thought that it was a marketing gimmick and very clever. Originally, its source was extremely interesting, that those carafes are wrapped in wicker or raffia, and then they would be lowered into the well at night with the wine in them, and then the next day pulled out of the well, and that wet raffia, as it dried, would keep the wine cool for lunch. So when the workers in the field had their lunch, they had their wine with it, too, at a halfway decent temperature, because as that water evaporated off of the raffia or the wicker bottle wrapping, it tended to refrigerate or chill down the wine, which is rather brilliant. Today you get them, but a lot of times they're made with synthetic, and they really don't do that anymore, because Chianti has taken its place beside all the great wines of the world and comes in the normal kind of shaped bottles. And as a matter of fact, the Chianti region is enormous. It goes almost clear across Italy, composed of the big towns of Pisa, Florence, Siena, etc. And this huge swath of land, you can produce Chianti. And as the rules and regulations have let up, the most important thing is Chianti must be at least 70% Sangiovese. And Sangiovese is a wonderful grape. But that area produces such remarkable wines, as was noted by Cosimo de' Medici in 1700, that they wanted to improve that. In about 1980, the people in Tuscany invented what they called Super Tuscans. These were wines that were made out of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Syrah, other grape types other than Sangiovese, because Sangiovese, according to Italian law, if Chianti is to be labeled Chianti, it must be at least 70% Sangiovese. And so when you buy these Super Tuscans, which are some of the most expensive wines produced in all of Italy, it's just very interesting. Ornellaia, Sassicaia are a couple of the Super Tuscan wines that are sometimes the most expensive wines that come out of the country of Italy, and they are labeled just Vin di Tab, or Vino di Tavola, wine of the table, because they have forsaken their any other namesake according to the laws of production of Chianti and of Tuscany, so that thus they're called Super Tuscans, and what you're drinking is just considered ordinary table wine, except it just shows the enormous quality of that soil and the ability to produce great wines in this huge area of Tuscany, which Chianti comprises most of. And the Chiantis of the world are really interesting. I, at one time, had a vineyard in Chianti called Villa Cafaggio. I wish I never sold it, but I did a long time ago. And it was great fun to go there twice a year and get involved in the harvest and get involved in planting and all the wonderful parts of owning a vineyard and none of the day-to-day responsibilities, because, believe me, owning a vineyard is darn hard work. And those people, those vigneron's, have my utmost respect, because unlike farmers, where you have the winter off, or a lot of it off anyway, when you're a winemaker, you're working all winter in the cellar. So it's really a time-consuming job and a wonderful, dedicated job. And we had a wonderful winemaker, Stefano, at Villa Cafaggio. It's just terrific. But what brought me to even talking about Villa Cafaggio is there's a town that Villa Cafaggio is very close to called Greve in Chianti. Greve in Chianti is a wonderful, picturesque town with a beautiful little church in it, and a unique plaza, etc. And they had the first of what I would call automatic dispensary for a wine tasting. Actually, that's an Italian invention. The Germans take credit for it. But you'd buy a card for one, 10 euros or 20 euros or whatever, and then you would get a glass and you'd put your card in the dispenser where the wine was, and then you would get an ounce or two of that particular wine. And it was totally dedicated to Chianti wines in this Greve in Chianti wine tasting operation, which was all automated. And of course, at the time, this was in the mid to early 80s, it was considered just so fantastic. Now you see those dispensaries all over the world, and they're not so unique. But at the time, when I first saw that in Greve, I had never seen one before, and there weren't very many. I think it was the third one ever made. But anyhow, it was just terrific. And talking about just terrific, Tuscany is just terrific. If you want a place to go and visit, I'm telling you, whether you like Chianti or you don't like Chianti, Tuscany is just hill towns at its best, is what I would call it. As you drive through the Tuscan countryside, you see all these fortified towns up in the hills, and they have their churches and forts, etc. I won't say it's impossible, but it's very, very hard in Tuscany to get a bad meal. They're really terrific cooks, and when you're sopping up that beautiful countryside and the great food, and plus the culture in those places, you know, Siena and Florence are virtually unbelievable for the amount of art, etc., that's reposing in those towns. And even some of the small towns around there have art that it just takes your breath away. And while you're in that Chianti region, you not only can satisfy your artistic desires, you can satisfy your appetite, because the food is absolutely terrific. And then the scenery is, as I said, almost breathtaking. When you sit in some of these plazas and have an aperitif and overlook that gorgeous countryside, you just know God is in heaven and all is right with the world. It's just a beautiful, wonderful place. And of course, the Chianti runs the gamut. I mean, there are Chiantis for almost every taste, and it's a wonderful expression of that terroir, the soil of that whole Tuscan region, that they can produce such variety as they do. A couple of the better known wines that aren't called Chianti but really well known and much very highly regarded is Brunello di Montalcino and Montalcino and Nobili di Monticello are just marvelous, and they're again almost 100% Sangiovese and wonderful wines to try. But today we're talking about Chianti and not their more expensive neighbors. But a good Chianti, you know, it's a little like the Rhone Valley. It's so big. There's over 10 million cases of Chianti are produced in that area. And so some of it isn't very good, thin and watery. Others are just terrific, and some of it is light and fun. And when you can find a light and fun Chianti, if it's got a good mother and father, in other words, it's been tended to by a good vineyard owner, and he's bought it from some good co-ops or whatever, those wines can be an unbelievable bargain and get them for $10, $12 a bottle. Our own is Villa Casa Ferrelli, which is a combination of Ferrell and Giorelli, our winemaker. That's Stefano, who I mentioned earlier was with Cafaggio, has come up with his Villa Ferrelli, Casa Ferrelli, Chianti, which is wonderful for everyday drinking wine and just super for stuff on the barbecue. And that's another thing about Chianti's that's really great, is they go so well with so many different dishes. I mean, you can have them, as I said, one of the great dishes of the world is Tuscan beefsteak, where they take a big, huge steak and sear it very quickly on either side. Then they throw in garlic and rosemary and olive oil in a pan, get that kind of hot, slice up that steak that's just been seared, so it's almost what the French would call blue. It's so rare. And you throw it in that garlic and rosemary and olive oil, and I'm telling you, that is some way to have a steak. It is absolutely delicious. And it's big and powerful, yet the Chianti goes well with that. And it'll also go well with a very delicate ravioli or a very hearty lasagna. But Chianti has all of those attributes. And the nice thing about it is, much like they learned, those peasants learned a long time ago, Chianti takes the chill kind of nicely. Particularly if you aren't buying a real expensive Chianti, one that's $50 or $60 a bottle, and you're buying just a $12, $15 bottle of wine or under, put a little chill on it. You won't be disappointed. And the chill doesn't take anything away from the wine. There's no deleterious effects whatsoever. But it is a delicious wine. So there we have a story, if you will, about Chianti. It's been satisfying people now for over 4,000 years, a wine from that region for 4,000 years. Wasn't always called Chianti, and probably didn't even look the same. But the fact of the matter is, you can't deny history, and that has a very noble history. And they're much like the Bordelais in the world. They blend wines. You know, the principal grape type is, as I said, Sangiovese, but they blend in Cabernet, Merlot, Syrah are a few of better-known wines that are blended. They also used to put in white grapes, two different types in Chianti that they don't do anymore. But anyhow, Chianti is a wonderful, wonderful red wine. It's a wonderful part of the world, and I encourage you, if you ever get the opportunity, go and visit Tuscany. I guarantee you will not be disappointed.
Oh, one of my favorites. And let's talk about Haskell's a little bit before we break.
Jack. Indeed, the folks at Haskell's love to talk about wine and love to help you pair wine with your meals, whether you're going to have something very fancy or something very plain. While they can't do the cooking, they can make sure that the meal is memorable. There's a Haskell's near you where you can save big dollars on wine. We have a Haskell's in Bloomington. There's one in Excelsior, Faribault, right off of 35. Our Maple Grove Super Cellar is just not to be believed. 22,000 square feet of wines from around the world, lots of Chianti, too, I might add. In downtown Minneapolis, we have free parking on Saturday and Sunday. There's a Haskell's at Ridgedale, Plymouth, St. Paul's Island Village, Stillwater, White Bear Lake, and Woodbury, too. And if you can't come in, go to Haskell's.com. And don't forget, Haskell's does deliver. And while I'm talking about it, don't miss the first cruise on the beautiful St. Croix next week. And don't miss the first cruise on the beautiful St. Croix next week. And what a cruise it is. There's a wonderful lunch, all sorts of wine and beer and spirits 3 hours of pure heaven on the Haskell's Boat Tour.
That sounds wonderful. Jack, let's talk again next week.
You know, Denny, I'm going to look forward to that.
That's Jack Farrell from Haskell's.